What's going on, everybody? We're back with the Real Bodybuilding Podcast, and I am with the man of the hour, the talk of all bodybuilding circles, Mr. Mark Hector. How are you, man?
I'm very good, Ferg. How are you?
Good, good. I was absolutely blown away by your physique in Spain. I think that's the first time I saw you there competing, and then again at the British show. And I think everybody that I've spoken to feels the same way about it. We're just kind of like, you came out of nowhere. Spain was your pro debut, correct?
Yes. Spain was my pro debut. I turned pro in 2018. I did plan originally to do the British Grand Prix in May.
Yeah.
But then COVID, Corona, everything hit. So
yeah.
I need to start push back. So yeah, Spain was my first show, my pro debut.
How are you able... We'll touch on it really quickly. I don't want to talk about COVID stuff for too long, but how are you able to manage with COVID and lockdowns and all that? Like, did you already start dieting for the British early in the year and then had to stop?
Yeah, so I was out in Kuwait. So I was working with Abdullah for 6 weeks out in Kuwait. So we did a bit of an off-season, then we started to go into a competition prep. Mm-hmm. And then with everything that was going on, I ended up coming back to the UK. So I was already in competition mode, dieting down, and then with shows being cancelled, just went into off-season. But generally, for me, I don't really go too far out, so we was just waiting to see what sort of shows, what might come up, mm-hmm. and dial it in for another show.
What's it like, where did you turn pro at? The Olympia?
Yeah, so it's the Amateur Olympia in the UK, 2018.
Okay, and did Abdullah train you for that too?
No, so Ernie Taylor, he was my coach back in 2018.
You mean Ernie Taylor, like the triceps Ernie Taylor?
That Ernie Taylor, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so in 2018, me and Ernie, we did three shows. So okay. Two shows was with a federation called the PCA. I won my weight class, won the overall at the two shows.
Yeah.
And then the last show we went to was the Two Bros Amateur Olympia. I won the super heavyweights, and mm-hmm. then I won overall as well.
So if you turn, but if you do the PCA, does that get you into the IFBB?
It doesn't, no. So the two shows with PCA was just separate. The last show what I did was just a straight amateur Olympia. So you didn't have to do no qualifiers.
Oh, you just walk on.
Yeah, you just walk on. You pay your entry because it was the first year Two Bros was doing the amateur Olympia.
Yeah.
So I was able to just pay my entry fee and just turn up and compete.
So how did those guys feel when they showed up? You just walked on your first like IFBB stream show and walk away with the pro. Did you win the overall at that show?
Yeah, so the top three from each category went through to, well, the top person from each class went through to the overall, and then the top three won the pro card. But I won the overall and I got the sword as well.
Wow, good for you, man. So how did you – thank you. So how did you hook up with Abdullah at O2?
Well, there was a team when I competed at the Amateur Olympia who was out at the Amateur Olympia UK. And one of Abdullah's best friends, who's also a coach at Oxygen Gym, told Abdullah about me. So okay. I think it was probably a day or two after I competed, Abdullah hit me up on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And we just got talking in 2018. Had the opportunity to go out and work with him from then. But I was quite new working with Ernie, had a few different things going on. And it didn't feel like the timing was quite right for me. So we still spoke. And in 2019, me and Abdullah hooked up again. I think I posted a picture to Instagram. He was like, "You're the future." And I thought, you know what, I'm just gonna message him and pick up where he left off before. And he's just basically saying, "Look, the opportunity is here. If you want to come and work with me, let's do it." And the rest is history.
So I think for people out there listening, the Kuwait thing is kind of a mystery. They don't know how it happens. So I know some people pay to go out there, and I know some people are selected. So in your experience, you were kind of just sitting at home one day and you got an email.
Yeah, you could say that. we'll go with that. Yeah, that's what I got. I got an email and I accepted the email as well.
And so you get the email and they're like, "Come to Kuwait and train." And you didn't, you were like, how old are you right now?
I'm 33.
So you're 31 at the time?
The original, when he first reached out to me, I was 31 year. But I didn't take that offer initially.
Yeah, but the question is, like, when you get that initial email from Kuwait, was it a moment of, like, elation? You're like, oh, God, you know, these guys see something in me, like, I want to go out there? Or was it kind of like, you know, you're kind of like, you didn't think anything of it?
Oh, no, no, it was definitely a big thing.
Yeah.
It was definitely a big thing. I think one of the main reasons why I didn't take it, because I've got a family, so I've got children, and okay, I needed to think about how can I support my family if I'm going out to Kuwait. Yeah. You know, I didn't have the resources, so I've got to think about long term, how am I going to be able to financially look after my house back here and my children? So that was one of the main factors why I couldn't go out then. Mm-hmm. But when the opportunity arose the second time, I thought, well, I've got to make a sacrifice. I've not made enough progress from 2018 to 19 when I turned pro.
Yeah.
And I want to go far in this sport. So it came to a point where I looked at all the different avenues in terms of finance and what's viable. And I thought, if I'm going to do it, I've got to do it now.
Yeah. How much did you weigh when you turned pro?
I weighed 102.3 kg. So that's about
210 pounds.
Yeah, I think it's about 225 pounds.
Yeah. I think it's like 210 pounds, something like that, but maybe a little more. But so then in the first year from 18 to 19, how much did you gain?
2018 to 19 didn't really go as I expected. A few different reasons. I didn't really feel like I got going. Like I was still, okay, I turned pro, didn't really get kicking into gear. It's almost just like, I've got a pro card, but what's happening? I've not made progress what I need to be made.
What, I think people find a lot of interest in those stories too. What do you think held you back that 1 year?
Structure. I needed a bit better structure. Me and Ernie had a good run when we was going into competition prep, and we never had an off season. I was already on prep for my three shows in 2018. Mm-hmm. And then he seen me. It's like, look, I can see the potential. Work together. You can definitely turn pro this year. Mm-hmm. So we worked together, had a successful run to turn pro.
Yeah.
And then 2018, things just didn't quite go the way you expected in terms of growing an off season. It just felt like I never really got out of first gear.
Was it the diet or what was it about that after you got your pro card, what was it that didn't click?
Yeah, I'll probably say it's the diet phase. So to truly grow, you need to think about increasing your food more than what you were doing before. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't the structure what I needed to really to be put on the muscle tissue.
Yeah. So then you decide to go to, in 19, you decide to go to Kuwait. You got a second chance.
So in 2019, I think it was November, the picture I posted on Instagram when Abdullah commented back, when he said the future. We started speaking, and then it was in December, we were speaking a little bit more. He said, look, the opportunity's here. I had a conversation with my work. They couldn't hold my job for longer than 2 weeks, and I was like, well, if you're not going to hold it, then I'm just going to go, because this is what I want to do. So it was in January, I finished working in the UK, and in February, I was out in Kuwait.
So how many kids do you have?
I've got two girls.
So you have two girls. Are you married or no?
I'm not married, no.
So you go to Kuwait, you have two girls, and you quit your job.
Yeah.
So how does that, I mean, look, I respect the sacrifice, but that's terrifying. So how did you figure you're going to manage? How did it work out?
So look, at the time I had a sponsor what was paying me a wage, not enough to cover my bills back here, but it went towards covering some part of the bills what I had back home.
Yeah.
And I had some online clients as well where I was able to offset some of the costs.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I've got quite a good family base as well. So my parents said, if at any point you need support, then we would help you because we support you fully in your goal and your dream.
That's really cool. So another question about the Kuwait guys, I know that sometimes they also, if they find somebody that they feel like is very, you know, has a lot of potential, they'll actually pay for them to be out there. So were you having to pay for your apartment and all that, or were they taking care of your food and your apartment and all that stuff? Are you allowed to talk about that?
I don't know if we're allowed to talk about it. But I was looked after.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a secret. I think I think they have different, from what I know, they have different tiers where if they find somebody who's very, you know, in the upper end of the potential spectrum, they take care of them. And then they have a second thing where people can go out there, but they have to pay for their apartments and their food. And there's a third thing where people have to go out there and have to pay for coaching and pay for the whole thing. So
I was in the first tier.
You're in the first tier.
I was in the first tier.
I actually think there might be, I'm not positive, but there might be a tier above that where they, okay, where they actually pay you to be there. So,
okay, all right. I'm waiting for that tier.
Well, judging by how you look, man, you're on your way to that tier.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so you got out there. When did you get out into Kuwait? What month was it in 19?
I was out there at the start of February of this year.
Oh, of 2020, you went out there.
Yeah, this year.
Okay, so how long were you in Kuwait?
6 weeks. Just 6 weeks.
What kind of progress did you... Explain to people what the Kuwait thing is like. What happens when you get there?
Okay, well, when I got there, I was thinking, I've only spoke to Abdullah on the phone. Is he actually going to be at the airport?
Yeah.
So that was the first thing.
Yeah.
Was there. It's just a structure. So you live, eat, breathe, sleep, bodybuilding. So from the moment I wake up in the morning, I'm heading to the gym, I'm doing some cardio. I'm doing maybe some abs routine or some calves. I'm doing my main training session and then back to the apartment, eating some food and sleeping.
I've heard that the Kuwait experience is like they have a key to your room and they're basically you're under their watch at all times. Is that true?
I don't know who's told you that and how people make that story up, but it's for me going out of there, Abdullah just wanted to make sure that I was comfortable. It's okay. Like you're coming out here the first time, you're on your own. I don't want to feel like you're isolated and you're homesick or anything like that. But I'm quite an independent person.
Yeah.
And for me, I was going out there with the intention of I'm just there to eat, sleep and train. Mm-hmm. I don't need to be socializing or doing anything. I just had one focus and that was to improve. But Abdullah was just like a big brother. He would message me, call me like, you all right? I'm going out for some steaks, food.
Yeah.
You want to come with me? So he involved me with everything what was going on, but I loved it. I absolutely loved it because when I was here in the UK, I was working a 9-to-5 job and then I was training and then I was doing personal training and I couldn't put everything into being the best bodybuilder. So being out there and just having one focus, it was perfect. I felt like I was in heaven.
So you love the bodybuilding aspect of it. Obviously, I mean, any true bodybuilder would see that. But was there any element of homesickness or boredom because it was just training? Or were you like, I don't care, this is what I'm here for, I'm just going to sit and train?
I think with technology now, it makes things a lot easier. So I was able to still communicate, FaceTime, speak with my children, speak with my family. You've got WhatsApp. There's still that communication there. And it's just the bigger picture. If I wanted to go far in this sport, I can't let the emotions of being homesick take over. I've got to think about, I'm here for one purpose, and that's to progress, to help myself, but also to help my family. So I never really had that.
Were there any other pros there in Kuwait when you were there, or was it just, were you kind of there on your own at that time?
Yeah, so I was actually sharing a room with Vlad. So he's
Vlad.
He's prepping for the Romania show at the moment.
Okay.
So I think he's a young bodybuilder, 23. Okay. So I shared an apartment with him. Nathan Diasha was out there as well.
Okay.
My training partner was 212, Ahmed Wardani.
Okay.
Yeah, so we were training together quite a few of the times.
And so you had friends there, like you had other people.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There was people there. So it wasn't like you just out there, you're on your own. There was definitely people around me you could speak to.
Communicate. It sounds like a bodybuilder vacation.
Yeah, you could say that. And the best thing is I didn't even have to cook my meals. The meals were already prepped and there and sorted out. So
that's that upper tier shit. You're in the top.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's really good.
So what kind of gains, because I see people go there and explode. And I didn't follow you before, you know, I think I just recently started following you. So I didn't know kind of what you looked like, but what kind of gains did you make from that time you got there to after the 6 weeks? Like, is it dramatic?
Okay. Yeah, so when I first went out there, I was weighing around 116 kg. And the heaviest I've ever weighed in any off-season, 118. I actually got up to, I think it was 128 kg.
Okay, so so you put on 25 pounds pretty much. Because you gained 12 kilograms, which is about 24, I'd say 28, 25, 28 pounds, something like that. That's a lot of weight to put on 6 weeks.
Yeah. And you could still see visible abs. My waist was still small.
So you now let me ask you about your waist, because it drives me insane, because I'm genetically not, I'm the opposite of you. I have thicker obliques. Is this a genetic thing, or is this something you consciously work at, having a small waist?
No, it's genetic. So my dad's got the small waist and the broad shoulders, the big arms, and decent sized chest. So for me, it's genetic. I do vacuums to try and make my waist smaller, and that's something what I want to practice when I'm on stage hitting some shots as well. Mm-hmm. But generally, it's genetic.
So when you go home from Kuwait and you come back 30 pounds heavier, what's it like when you get home? Is everybody like blown away? Are you fueled up and now even more motivated to get even bigger? Like, where does the plan go from there?
So when I came back from Kuwait, I was actually starting my cut. So I did about 4 weeks off season to gain some size. Okay. And I was about 2 weeks into a cut. But then I came back and the cut, we was in lockdown, so no one really see me. All they could see was the pictures what I posted online. But what was visible to my family, like when they picked me up from the airport, it's like, you've changed.
Yeah.
You've grown.
I want to touch on your family later, because I think it's really awesome that your parents are that supportive. But I want to go back to Kuwait for 1 minute, because it's I think, you know, sometimes I skip over the X's and O's of bodybuilding stuff. And I think some people that are listening really like that. So I want to go back to the Kuwait and the 28 pounds or 12 kilos, however you want to say it, because someone's going to inevitably ask me, how did you put on that weight? Like, what kind of meals are you eating? Why? How did your diet change, I guess? What was the difference in meals from your food at home that you're eating, but between that and what Abdullah put you on when you got to Kuwait?
I was eating food that I didn't even think I could manage to eat. So okay. Back at home, I was probably eating like 5 to 6 meals.
Yeah.
We were pushing 7 to 8 meals.
Are you serious?
I'm not a big eater. I can't eat a lot of food. But I've done it like, if you want to grow, you've got to eat.
Yeah.
So some meals sometimes took me up to 45 minutes, an hour, in one sitting to eat the food.
Okay.
And it's like, do you want to grow or do you not?
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I'm so glad you said that, because I get so many DMs from people who are like, I just can't gain weight. And I'm like, I don't think people understand what we have to do to get to the size we are.
Yeah.
Especially somebody who's a hard gainer. I mean, you're probably genetically like a leaner guy.
Yeah, that's right. When I start putting on weight,
So I've never eaten 7 or 8 meals in a day. How often are you eating? Like every hour and a half?
No, well, we generally wake up quite early. So I was waking up quite early, probably around 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that's when my meals start.
So every couple hours.
Spread it out throughout the day. But some training sessions, I was training sometimes twice a day.
Yeah.
So we've got to make sure you've got to get those food in early to make sure you're fueled for the workouts.
Are you napping a lot during the day to recover?
Yeah. So that was great, because I never had that option before. So for example, when we train back, I would train hamstrings in the evening.
Yeah.
So I would train back probably around 1 o'clock, and then after we finish training back, like my post-workout meal and shake, then I'll probably sleep for another 2 hours or so, and I'll wake up, get the meals in, and I'll go back and train hamstrings.
So you literally eat, sleep, train. That's all you're doing every day.
That's it.
What?
With one rest day a week.
And you're doing 2 days every day?
No, just 2 days once a week.
Okay. So what day was a 2 a day?
So the 2 a day was when I was training back, and then I'll do hamstrings in the evening.
And everything else was just one body part a day?
Yeah, generally one body part, or I might do a smaller body part like arms, like biceps with chest.
Yeah. Can you break down what one meal would sound like? Like, what was one meal before you went to Kuwait? What would you normally eat? Like, just
see, this is where it's quite loose. So before, I could have been eating. So in Kuwait, we go by cooked weight. So back here, I could have been eating maybe like 150 grams of chicken with like 200 grams of rice.
That's nothing.
We get to Kuwait and I'm eating rice. We need steak. Red meat's good for you. So it could be like 250 grams of steak. Then we're eating 350 grams of sweet potato or white potato.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay.
So they taught you how to eat.
Yeah, got to eat.
That's gotta like, eat. I don't even know how you turned pro on the previous diet.
I know.
150 grams of chicken, 200 grams of rice.
Is not enough.
All right, so you come back, you put on all the size, COVID hits, you got to take a break, and then when do you start prepping for Spain? When did you realize, like, okay, I'm gonna do this? And did you put on any size? Like, were you able to do anything substantial in the time of COVID when you were kind of off? Were you still able to train?
Lockdown was a blessing, if I'm going to be honest. I'm glad that that happened because that gave me a chance to put on more muscle before heading into my first show. Okay. So I could have competed in May at the British Grand Prix. Yeah. I don't think I would have had the quality of muscle what I've got now from having that extra time. So looking for me, I had a setup.
Okay.
So I could still train and I was able to still make progress in that time, but I was able to use the principles and the methods what I learned out in Kuwait to then transfer into my training here, even though the equipment was different.
What was the setup? Like, where were you training? Are you allowed to say?
I don't know who's listening. I had access to train. Okay. So I was good.
I think a lot of us, I don't know what the law is there, but I think there was a law. I think there's a law here in Canada that if you have professional status as an athlete, you're exempt.
Yeah.
And you're allowed to like go into a gym and train. So I don't know if it's like that anywhere else. I don't know. I don't even know if somebody just made that up and told me that. And I ran with it, but, okay. So the shows open up and you decided to do Spain. That was the one you decided to pick. Or was it something else? Yeah. And then you and Abdullah are just working through FaceTime, WhatsApp.
So me and Abdullah, we speak generally 3-4 times a day.
Really?
Every day, yeah. Our communication is, I've never had communication like this before.
Really?
So, yeah. Even when the gyms open back up, I would go to the gym and it would say, what setup have you got equipment-wise? Mm-hmm. So I would actually go to FaceTime and I was showing what equipment's in the gym, showing him around. And it's like, right, okay. Well, in Kuwait, we did have this machine, but we need to work, for example, I want to work on your lower chest.
Yeah.
You're not been hitting lower chest, so we need to get a decline chest press machine. Which gym has that?
Yeah.
So I'm going to that gym what's got that machine, and then he's setting my workout for that day.
That's the most intense coaching system I've ever heard of.
Yeah, his attention to detail is like no other. I've never had that before.
Yeah, but that's that top tier shit. You shouldn't say that, because now other people are going to expect that same. They're going to be like, how come I'm not talking to him 4 times a day, right?
And then every day I'm sending a check-in video, especially during prep, because he wants to see how my body's changing. So if I've had like refeed meals, he wants to see, okay, how did your body look the day before compared to this? Mm-hmm. Okay, right. And then he takes that note. So he'll say, when we head into what they call the peak week,
and
know how to run certain foods and certain times to make sure you stay conditioned.
So you said refeeds. Does Abdullah do cheat meals or just refeeds?
It was more, well, he did both. He did a bit of both. Okay. So, he'll up the carbs when it was needed, or he'll say, right, okay, we're going to remove a meal and we're going to put in like burgers. Let's see how your body responds.
Do you find your body burns fat pretty quickly?
Yeah, it does.
So you're not, did you do a lot of cardio or no?
I was doing cardio. I was saying to Abdullah, like, I don't think I need to do this much cardio, but it's like, we're not in condition yet. You've got to do the cardio. But I just followed the plan. So we was doing cardio in the morning. We was doing cardio after workout as well.
Okay.
The intention with that was he wanted me to be ready at least a week early.
Yeah.
So when we're ready early, then we can back off. I don't want to be pushing your body hard into the final phase because we need to be able to relax and ease off.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you go into Spain and it's your pro debut, and did you know all the guys who were doing it?
I knew most of them. Yeah, I've seen the lineup, so I knew most of the people who were competing there.
Did you feel like, I remember my pro debut and I was a nervous mess. What was your pro debut more? Were you more confident? Were you more nervous? Like, how did you feel going into it?
I was confident. Yeah, I was confident. Okay. I was confident that I was bringing my best to the stage.
Yeah.
And generally when I prepare for a show, you see me backstage, I'm away from everyone else. I'm totally in my zone, thinking about what I need to do. It doesn't make sense for me to be looking at other people and thinking, oh, this is this bodybuilder there. Because then you start to get derailed from what you need to do. Mm-hmm. So I was just focused on my job, and I was confident with what I was bringing.
So is that how you kind of eliminate the pressure on yourself, by kind of just staying in your lane, doing kind of what you need to do?
Yeah. If you see me backstage, you're probably thinking that is this guy even here to compete? Because I'm just in the corner on my own. You probably don't even notice I'm there, because that's how I find I can get prepared for a show best, by just keeping myself to myself, not getting distracted, not really engaging in conversation with anyone.
Yeah.
Just because I like to think about what I need to do.
Okay. I found that when I was backstage, I found that the camaraderie, kind of trying to be more friendly with the other guys would reduce the pressure for me. Yeah. But you kind of the opposite. You're like, you want to be in your own little zone and focus on that.
Yeah. But I think that comes as well, because my background before bodybuilding was athletics.
Okay.
And that was sprinting as well. And it's the same sort of mentality, whereas I'm just thinking about tunnel vision. I've got to focus about how I'm going to get out of the blocks, how I'm going to perform to get the best times. It's the same backstage. It's like, okay, right, I know when I go out on stage, I'm hitting the front pose, and then I'm going quarter turn. I'm processing everything in my mind to keep me focused. And I feel like if I start having a conversation with someone else, I'm going to lose sight of what I need to do.
I see. So describe the show to me. You go out there, you do your first pro show. Does it feel like the amateur show, or does it feel different?
It doesn't feel like an amateur show. To be honest, I did. Although it's on a pro stage, I just felt like it's another show. Try not to put the pressure on. Okay, right, I'm competing against all these other guys. Just go out there and enjoy it. I think when I go out and enjoy it, it would just feel like another show.
Yeah, and that's how it was for you. You just enjoyed it. Did you enjoy the comparisons and everything? You were good the whole way through.
Yeah, I was completely fine. Yeah.
So where did you end up finishing in Spain? Seventh?
Yeah, I finished seventh.
Were you happy with your placing there, or what did you think?
I would have liked to have been higher, but I also know that I brought my best. So if that's the highest I can place against such a tough lineup, then I've got to be happy with that. Because
it was a very good lineup.
It's probably the biggest show next to Olympia this year. And to come seventh in your first show, still good going.
Yeah, of course. So then after that, you decided to do the British. Now, there's a lot of heritage in British bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And you had James doing the show, and Samson doing the show, and a number of other UK bodybuilders. Was the British show kind of a bigger thing for you? Like, you really wanted to make your mark there?
To be honest, when I finished doing the Spain show, I swear my emotions were quite high. And I was like, I don't know if I can come back better than what I did in Spain.
Yeah.
So I was like, I think I might have to shut it down for the year. And he was like, okay, if that's what you want to do. And then like a day after I called him, I was like, look, I'm ready. I was like, I can't shut it down for this year. I said, I've come too far this year to shut it down after one show.
Yeah.
I said, let's come in bigger. Let's come in drier. And let's just bring something else.
Yeah. You got the post-show letdown. You finished the show and you're like, I need a break. And then a day later, you realize you didn't want a break.
Yeah, couldn't have a break. There was more. There was definitely more.
Yeah. So what did you guys do differently leading into the British? Did you change? Did he add more food? Like, what did you do?
Yeah, so I was able to increase the food. So in the Spain show, the carbs were reduced. This time I was able to keep the carbs higher. He was able to keep the protein source with a bit more red meat in there as well, because that keeps me fuller.
Yeah.
Was able to reduce the cardio down quite a bit as well. Mm-hmm, I think with those changes, it helped me to come in fuller and more conditioned and less stressed.
Yeah.
Because my body didn't have so much output from the cardio.
So you walked into Spain, you walked into the British, and I think you walked away with fourth there?
I was third.
Third. That's right. Yeah. You were third there. Because I don't know why I don't know that, because I did the breakdown for it. We were watching it, me and Paul. Paul's an IFBB judge. He's a friend. He's my best friend and training partner.
Yeah.
And we were blown away. And me and Ben Chow was on with us, and we were talking about it. And we were doing the commentary. And when you came out, we were just floored by your physique, man. Like,
thank you.
And it looked like you had so much polish when you came out and you kept it all the way to the very end.
Yeah.
Because like, cause some of the other guys, like you saw some of the guys fading as the judging and everything went on, where you kept everything in check all the way from the beginning to the end. Were you happy with your placing at the British?
Yeah. So my goal going into the British was I wanted to get the first call out. So yeah. I wanted to move up the ranks from my first pro show.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get the first call out. And then if I got first call out, my goal was I want top three.
Okay.
I want to battle for top three. So finishing third, of course, everyone wants to win a show.
Yeah.
But my goal was if I got third, I'll be happy with that. And
Lucky
for me, that did happen. But with what you were saying about the polishing, what I find is the more I pose, the harder I get.
Yeah.
So the more the rounds go on, it's better for me. And that's something when, again, me and Abdullah, sometimes we face timing at night.
Yeah.
Night, 10 o'clock, and we're doing rounds of posing.
Yeah.
And the more I pose, the more cuts come out, the more faster I get. So I've been conditioned for posing. So
is that something you do getting ready to go out before you go out on stage? Do you do, instead of pumping up, do you just do a lot of posing or no?
No, I don't really do any posing before I go out.
But you get sharper as you go during a prejudging.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I get sharper.
All right. So you take third, you celebrate, you kind of reach your goal. What's next? Now you're taking a break? You're just putting on size?
Yeah, I did think about Romania, but like you said in one of your podcasts, sometimes you've got to take a step back to take two forward.
Yeah.
For me, finishing third, I feel like I achieved what I needed to achieve for this year. I would have loved to have competed and qualified for next year's Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've learned through moving through the amateur ranks, going from show to show to show, it's hard to maintain a certain level.
Yeah.
So for me, if I went to Romania, I'm not convinced that would I have brought my best.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to listen to your body, take that step back.
Well, I think there's only a few positives to doing Romania. If you thought you could win and qualify for the Olympia, that would be a big deal. Or if you could place in the money and you wanted a check, that would be another reason. Because it was only a couple weeks away, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And but there isn't really any other positive other than those two things, because you've kind of already proven who you are. You've showed the judges who you are. Them seeing the same package again doesn't really help you anymore. I think the next time they see you, they want to see you better.
Yeah, that's right. That's
so,
right. And that's the feedback I got from the judges at the British. Just like, your shape's great, your physique is good. We just want to add a bit more muscle to that.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to add no muscle from a week and a half going into another show.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to shut it down.
Did they give you anything specific to work on, or did it just say overall size?
Overall, but work on also hamstrings from the rear.
Yeah.
Hamstrings from the rear.
Do you mind if I give you our critique? If you don't,
that's fine. I'll take it on board.
Unless you already listen to it. Well, no, because me and Paul were talking. We were absolutely blown away by your physique. And Paul's like, and like I said, he's an IFBB judge. And he was like, if he can build his legs more. And the thing I noticed, you know, when I started, you have a very wide shoulder structure. And when I started, I had the same issue. My shoulders were very wide. And I thought my legs were big enough. But because my shoulders were so wide, they wanted my legs to be bigger. They kept telling me, you need bigger legs. You need bigger legs. So I had to make my legs actually bigger than normal just to, like, get them to match my shoulder width. So that would be the only thing. Like, we were like, if Mark builds his lower body a little bit more, and then the only other thing I thought was your lower lats. If you got, because your back is very, very good and it starts very low. But if you thickened up your lower lats, it would be like lights out from anybody. So I'm a huge bodybuilding fan. So like, I'm excited to see what you do over the course of the next, because I told the guys we were watching, I'm like, this guy in 2 years, top of the Olympia, like we're talking like at the top six. That's what I think you can,
Thank you.
So
thank you very much.
What is the plan now for the off season? Are you going back to Kuwait?
Yeah. So the plan, me and Abdullah have been speaking already, post Olympia, all being well around January time, I'm going to head out to Kuwait. Going to have a long off season out there. I'm not sure what shows are going to come up, but we want to try and do a show where I've got a good maybe 3-4 months of building some muscle before we cut back down.
So you're looking at probably not competing until August.
Yeah. If the longer it can give me with the chance of qualifying for the Olympia,
I think it's a great idea. I think sometimes guys rush too much, like they want to compete too often.
Yeah.
And they don't take the time they need to actually build onto their physique. So yeah, I think that's a great idea on your part.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to that. More than 6 weeks out there.
So I want to touch on the family aspect. You said you aren't married.
I'm not married, no.
But you have a girlfriend.
Yes, that's right.
So how does it work when you go to Kuwait? Is your girlfriend like cool? See you in a few months, or like how does that work?
Well, my girlfriend isn't the mother of my children, but yeah. She's also a bikini pro.
Okay.
I've been a bikini pro, so her pro debut was the same show as me.
Yeah.
But Kuwait is flexible, and she does have friends out in Kuwait as well, so we kind of can work things out around when we actually still see each other.
So is she allowed to come out to see you?
So she's got a friend who lives out in Kuwait, so. Yeah. Yeah, she can stay at a friend's house. She can still see me.
I didn't explain to me. I should probably know this since I'm Middle Eastern, but I don't.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you some specifics, and maybe you can tell me the answers. I don't know if you're allowed to say or not allowed to say. I don't know, but what are the rules for women in Kuwait? Is there any rules? Like, are the women just allowed to come and go as they please? Like, do they have to wear a headdress? Like, what is it?
I'm not sure all of those stuff.
I mean when your girlfriend comes to visit, is she? Okay.
Oh, no, covered up. Yeah, you're covered up. You're still wearing,
yeah.
Like, you're not showing flesh or anything like that.
So she comes to stay and she visits. And so if you go for like 3 or 4 months, she'll come and visit you a few times and you guys will be okay.
Yeah, probably. I've not been out there that long to be able to have that. To know what that's like. But
yeah.
Either way, if I was out there for 3 or 4 months and we didn't see each other, the goal still remains like she supports me 100%. So if I'm out there for 4 months, there she is now.
Is that her? Hi.
Yeah, that's her. So if I'm out there for 4 months, the goal still remains like you've got to do what you got to do.
So you guys have that kind of understanding, that kind of relationship? Because me and my wife have talked about it before, because I was asked to go out there a long time ago and I didn't, but we usually talk about like how that would go. And I always felt like, I don't know if I could, I mean, it's a lot of discipline on your part to be able to just, you know, take off and leave. And it's a lot of sacrifice on her part too, to be able to be understanding enough that she can just say, okay, go do what you got to do. I'll see you when you get back.
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, it's all for the greater good, right?
This is it. And because we are both so driven with our goals individually, but collectively, it's something we talk about and we work on to make sure that, you know what, we've got to look at the bigger picture here. And if it means that my best chance is being out there for a period of time, then we just got to do that.
Mm-hmm. How often are you with your kids?
So it varies. Right now it's lockdown, so it's different.
Oh, that's right.
It's different. But I do see my kids. My oldest kid is actually an elite gymnast, so she trains like 24 hours a week. So right now with lockdown, she's not too happy because she can't get to train.
Yeah. Well, I was asking because I wanted to know what it was like. I always ask everybody with kids, because I don't have kids. I always ask them what it's like to diet and get ready for a contest when you have kids and you have to take them to restaurants and they have junk food in the house and all that kind of thing. So you haven't had to deal with that yet.
It's tough. No, I do have to deal with that. And it's just one of these things. Kids, I can't say to a kid, right, I can't let you have this McDonald's or this fast food because I'm dieting, because they're kids and they don't necessarily understand that. And this is my choice. And for me to be the best like parent I want to be, I still want them to be able to enjoy the things what kids should enjoy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What's your off-season situation like? Are you, because I've interviewed people, you know, like I've had Sergio and Keon on, and you know, if I talk to those guys, they say they have a lot of junk food in their diets in the off season, like, because they can get away with it. So they're just like, you know, Keon flat out said to me, you know, I usually have one junk food meal a night. So does that fit into your off season plan, or are you very strict all year round?
So at the moment, I'm not really following a set meal plan. I'm just having a bit of downtime. But if, like, when I'm out in Kuwait, the food's set. So if I'm eating 6 or 7 meals a day, that's 6 or 7 meals a day, what I'm expected to eat. I'm not thinking about I need to go and eat something off plan.
Yeah.
If we have generally on a rest day, we was having going out and having some food. But I'm structured, whatever it takes. If I have to eat 7 meals on plan, I'll eat 7 meals on plan. But I can get away with eating some junk food.
Yeah, it looks like it.
It doesn't exactly.
What? You're so lucky, man. I can't. If I eat any shit, it's like I see it the next day. Yeah. So what did you, how did you get into bodybuilding so, and why did you get into bodybuilding so late?
So my background before, like I said, was athletics. And yeah. I really enjoyed that. I had good sprinting times for 100 meters and 200 meters. And then I sort of transferred my sprinting ability, because I had to start to do some weights, into the gym. I just enjoyed weight training. I think one of the reasons why I didn't want to compete, because I didn't want to wear the trunks on stage. I see these little trunks. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But I went and seen a few competitions, and I thought, you know what? I think I can do this. I can do this. Coming from a sport where athletics is individual, it's the same with bodybuilding. Although you have a coach who supports you, ultimately it's you going on stage yourself. So, I started late. At 26 is when I done my first show. I won my first show, and I just got a buzz for it.
What's the fastest you ever ran 100 meter?
10.7.
Jeez.
10.7.
So, and what? How did you get over the trunks? What made you? What made you realize it was okay? You're like, I gotta put them on. It doesn't matter.
I needed a focus. Needed a focus. Like, I come from a very sporting background, so I played a bit of football before. I was in athletics. It's like, what do I do next?
Yeah.
And in athletics, I was always that person who had the fast times, had the potential, but it didn't quite make it. So I think the next thing what just worked for me was, right, I'm already training in the gym. Why not give it a go at bodybuilding to see what I can do?
I have a question for you about bodybuilding, because I think a lot of this questions come up in other times. You know, I used to talk to Luke about this at times. Do you think you chose bodybuilding or bodybuilding chose you? And what I mean by that is some people love bodybuilding. Like, they love everything about it. They want to be a bodybuilder. They want to be in the gym all the time. And some people do it because they're good at it. Like, they do it and they like it, but it makes them like it even more because they're good at it. So is it like, was it one of those things that you started doing it and you realized, hey, I'm pretty good at this, I'm going to keep going? Or was it like, this is what I love doing and that's why I'm going this way?
I loved it, but I think when I started to see the changes, and I was around people who had been around bodybuilding for years, and it's like, wow, you've got something what not many people have.
Yeah.
And because I was quite new to it, I didn't really understand it, but I enjoyed seeing the changes in my physique.
Yeah.
Because I was seeing the changes and I was seeing extra details, what I've never seen before. I was like, I want more of this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's solid, because I remember when I started, I've asked myself this question so many times over the course of 20 years. And I think it was just like, I was good at something, so I kept doing it.
Yeah.
Like, I fell in love with it, like, because I was good at it. Does that make sense? It's not like I fell in love with it. Yeah. So it's almost like it's weird how that happens. Cause it's not like you chose it. It's like you went there and like, you're just kind of made for it. So you kept going.
That's it.
Does that make sense?
That's it. And like, going back to what I said with athletics, I didn't want to be that person where you had the potential, but then you didn't do anything. So I went and did my first show and I won that. And I was like, right, this is my focus now. If I'm going to make something in a sport, it's going to be bodybuilding. So I'm going to put everything I've got to be a better bodybuilder.
You know, one question I always find really interesting is, at what point did you realize, like, was it right after your first show, or was there another point somewhere along the way where you're like, I'm going to make this my life? Because for me, like, I won my first show and I won my second show and I was happy, but I didn't really think that I was going to be a pro bodybuilder. I was going to make a living. It was kind of like after, where something hit me and I'm like, okay, I left school and I was like, this is what I want to do. So like, at what point did it click for you? Or like, this is how I want to make my living for however long it is.
I think there was a few different points. So I think in 2015, so in my first year of competing, 2012 to 13, I've done 4 shows and I competed at the Worlds and the Europeans within my first year.
Okay.
And competing at those shows gave me insight what it's like to compete against guys who come in with great condition.
Yeah.
So I took 2 years off, came back in 2015, qualified for like the Arnold Classic, the British, the UK, and also the Diamond Cup it was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, that was the qualification I got. I was set, like, I'm going to win my pro card. This is my year. Yeah. It was actually the year that Luke won his pro card.
Okay.
At that show, and I stepped back and I looked at the people who won my class because I came sixth, and I was like, I'm not ready yet.
Yeah.
I'm not ready yet. So yeah. I took 2 years off, and when I did come back in 2018, I thought, this is going to be the year where I'm going to get it.
Okay.
I thought the show is what I had planned, but this is the year that I'm going to turn pro.
I didn't realize it was all those other shows beforehand. I thought you had just started competing in 2018. So you did like a whole bunch of shows before.
Yeah, so I started in 2012. I won a beginner's class, and then I went 2013. So 2012 November was my first show. I won that class.
Yeah.
I think it was about 13 bodybuilders. I went and competed in 2013 at Nationals under 90 kg, and I won that. And then that got me selected to compete at the Europeans in Moldova. I think I came about ninth in that class.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to the World Championships and I came dead last.
What happened? Wait a minute. What I want to. Why were you dead last, and how did that affect you?
I was dead last just because I wasn't ready for that stage.
You mean conditioning or size?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Okay. So I was still the same height, but I was weighing. I was like competing under like 85 kg. I was too small.
Yeah,
I was too small, too tall and too small for that class. It wasn't right.
Yeah.
But I needed that experience because I've been winning shows in the UK. I needed that experience of coming last and seeing the level of conditioning from the other guys to then say, right, I competed four times in my first year, and now I need to take a step back, work on improving my physique to come back. And if that takes 1 year or 2 years, I'm going to take that time. And I actually took 2 years off.
Let me ask you this question. If you had done your first show and taken last, would you still kept going? Or was it because you already won, you had already had some success, and then you took last, it enabled you to keep going and want more? Like, had you encountered that placing in the very beginning, would you have just shied away from bodybuilding completely, you think?
I think that's hard to say, because even when I took out my membership with the federation that I competed with, I took out a 4-year membership. So this wasn't just something where I was thinking and spur of the moment, I'm just going to do one shot and that's it.
Yeah.
I had it in my mind, like, I actually want to give this a good go.
Mm-hmm.
But winning my first two shows, and even when I went and competed at the European, I came like 8th or 9th, that was still okay for me, because I needed these experiences to compete against these international amateur athletes to then push me on to the next level.
What's the experience like for you coming up in the ranks with sponsorships and getting paid and finding the right company to be with? I know you're sponsored by HD.
I'm not actually with HD.
Oh, you're not with HD anymore?
I'm not with HD no more, no.
I'm sorry, who are you with?
I'm not with anyone at the moment.
I think I'm going to send you a contract then. let's hash it out right here on the show. Okay, well, then let me rephrase the question. What's the landscape been like with you since you started bodybuilding, as far as like that side of things? Because I think a lot of bodybuilders don't know what to expect when they're coming up through the ranks. They don't know what to expect from sponsorships. They don't know what to expect when they turn pro. They don't know all these things. So kind of what's been your experience to date with that side of the sport?
Well, when I was an amateur, I was quite fortunate that I had my first sponsor. I was with them for pretty much the whole of my amateur's career. So I was with a company called PharmaFree.
Okay.
A Canadian base. I was with them for about 4 years. And although I was an amateur, they treated me very well. So they took me out. I worked the Olympia Vegas twice, the Expo. They was really invested in me. And through having that investment and understanding what it's like to be a sponsored athlete, even though I was an amateur, I was able to then take that into the other contracts when I turned pro, as also almost like a baseline of what I should expect.
Mm-hmm. With that contract, were you getting paid, or was it supplements, or was it how, like, do you mind me asking that?
Yeah, so the PharmaFreak one, I wasn't getting paid, but it was supplements. They gave me allowance towards supporting, paying for shows.
Sure.
And when we went out to the expos for Olympia, they covered those costs, photo shoots. They really did look after me as an amateur.
And how did you feel about the responsibilities being sponsored, like having to do photo shoots and having to do like all the different things that came with being an athlete? Did you welcome that, or was it hard for you to kind of do those things?
That was fine, because what they was asking, it was quite natural to me. It wasn't like they was asking me to do something out of the norm. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes with certain sponsors, they might ask you to do something what starts to become like a job and detract from where you want to actually do what you perform, yeah, performances in the gym, where I never really had that with PharmaFreak, which was good.
Do you have a YouTube channel?
I don't, but that's something I'm looking into right now.
Okay.
To get some content out.
I want to, before we go, I want to show everybody your physique, and I want to ask you if you have heard the comparisons of your physique. Have you heard about the comparisons in your physique and who they're comparing you to?
Are we talking about Brian Buchanan? Is that who we're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. So this is like the main comparison I've been hearing is you and Brian Buchanan. This is, when is this picture? Let's go over some of these photos. So when is this video from?
So this is the day of the British Grand Prix. That's my check-in video first thing in the morning, what I sent to Abdullah.
Do you think you look like Brian Buchanan?
We've both got a small waist, but legs wise, I think I take Brian on that, but
yeah,
definitely got a very good taper.
Yeah. You have a very, very complete physique, man. It looks very good. I mean, yeah, there's some areas that need to come up in size, but it's like, it's all there, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
So that's the day of the British. This is you on stage at the British.
Yeah, that's right. So that's my posing routine.
How do you feel when you're on stage? Is it natural for you, or is there any fear involved, or any type of panic or anything? Are you comfortable on stage?
I'm comfortable. This posing and practicing is something what I do regularly. So when it comes to the stage and you know you're in condition, it's just to go out there and enjoy it and just let it flow.
Have you ever been on stage and not been in shape other than the time you took last?
I would say 2016, when I completed that at the British in the UK, it wasn't the level of condition I wanted, because what I did, I competed at the Arnold Classic 2 weeks before,
yeah,
and I wanted to compete up to 95 kg because they had the point, like the 95s, the 100s out in Europe. And with going 95 kg, I ended up sacrificing too much size and I ended up weighing like 92.
So you've been on stage. How is your confidence level when you're on stage and you're not in shape? You still feel good or no?
When I walked out on the Arnold Classic stage, I thought, I'm not ready for this stage. I walked out there and I thought, this stage isn't for me for right now. I'm not ready. I'm not prepared. I've not practiced enough for my posing, and whatever the placing is, I've got to take it because I need to go back to the drawing board.
So it goes to kind of lends itself to that, saying that, you know, the confidence is the best mode of preparation, because, or being prepared is the best way to be confident, or whatever the saying is. I'm sure I'm butchering it, but
yeah,
the more prepared you are, the more confident you're going to be on stage, because some guys struggle with the anxiety of being on stage or the fear of being on stage. And you're basically saying that being ready is the best way to combat that.
That's right. So practicing your posing daily. I'm a kind of person who likes to visualize my poses. So this posing routine, for example, what you're looking at now,
yeah,
I would look back at that and think, all right, okay, I need to change this shot to make it better,
yeah,
because I didn't quite hit it right.
Yeah. Yeah. This is you and your girlfriend here.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That was, I think that was about 1 week before flying out to the European Spain.
Sure. Okay. That's cool, man. It's cool. How do you find being in a relationship with another competitor?
You know what? It's good. It's good because we're both on the same wavelength. Believe it or not, we still hit some sessions together as well, the majority of sessions. And we just help each other. So there's going to be days where I might feel a little bit more tired than her, and she might be able to pick up the slack, like, okay, right, I'm going to go and get the food sorted out. And it sort of just works as a good partnership.
Are you ever in a position where you're kind of at each other because you're both dieting and you're hungry? Don't lie, man.
We both look at each other, and our stomachs might be rumbling together, but we're not at each other. We definitely
are. Are you saying that because she's sitting there, or are you saying that?
Oh, no. I can bring her in, and she can confirm that as well. She can confirm that.
All right. I'm just messing with you. Okay, so I want to show everybody Brian Buchanan before we go, because this is the comparison I was making. So,
yeah.
I mean, I see it. It's been mostly just the waist, but I do understand the comparison, just because it's not often you see somebody like with your structure, with the wide shoulders and the tiny waist like that. But his legs are pretty good, no?
Yeah. Brian's a good bodybuilder. This is the era of bodybuilding I'm a fan of.
Who's got a smaller waist? You or Brian Buchanan? This is tiny, man. Do you think he's got you beat in the waist area or what?
I'll have to work on mine a little bit more, because the top picture in the left, that looks pretty small.
This one? Oh my god.
I can't see a waist.
Let's see. Do you have any front doubles up here anywhere?
Probably a little bit higher up.
Let's see if I can find a front double. There's one. I think he's got you beat, man.
Yeah, I do too.
Oh my god, that's nothing, right? I'm extremely jealous of both of you.
That's a small waist.
Listen, is there anything you want to kind of, any message you want to put out there, anything you want to say before we go? I always kind of give people like the last word and kind of put out whatever message they feel like they want to put out about bodybuilding or anything else.
I think it's just more than anything, just so I've got to say a lot of thank yous, in particular to Abdullah for the confidence that he's put in me and the trust and what he's done to help me on my bodybuilding journey. It just means a lot, because without him, I don't think I would have been able to bring the package what I've been bringing to the stage. And his level of confidence in me is definitely translated from when I'm going onto the stage, because he believes in me so much. Mm-hmm. Badder as well, from Oxen and Jim, for all his help. I've got some close friends in Leicester as well. Reza, who is... he's just like a brother. Anything I need or anything he can do to support, he's really there.
Yeah.
My partner, Kerry Sexton, IPB Pro Bikini, and Rich from Hot Bodies Gym. He's looked after me throughout the whole of my competing career, from amateur to a pro. And I'm really grateful for those people. And, of course, my family as well.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't talk about that.
Yeah.
So, look, two things I want to ask you. Before we go quickly, I won't keep you too long. I just want to know.
That's all right.
It's not normal. I mean, it's a good thing, but it's not normal that someone's family is on board with their bodybuilding career. I find it very, for lack of a better word, awesome, because my family was never, they were never like, don't do it, but they were never like really supportive either. So I find it really cool when a family's actually really involved. You know, like Nick Walker said, his mom goes to all his shows, and like, you know, Steve Kuklo's family's really involved. So I just find it to be really cool that way. So tell me about your family, because you said your mom and dad kind of helped you that way.
Yeah, so my mom and dad are fully supportive of my bodybuilding. If my mom's ever at a show, I wouldn't have to tell you my mom's at a show, because she's probably going to be the loudest person in that crowd. But even on prep, so if I was struggling and I said, you know what, I can't make it to the supermarket to go get my food, they will go and get that food. They will cook that food. They will support me in any way they can, because they just want me to be the best version of me.
Yeah.
When I initially spoke to them about Kuwait and the opportunity, they was like, look, son, we support you. If this is where your dream is and your goal is, you've got to go and get it, because opportunities like this don't come around very often, and not twice. So you've got to go and do it. So they're really supportive of my journey.
What's your background?
In what sense?
Like your heritage, your nationality.
Okay, so my mum is from Jamaica and my dad's from Antigua.
Are they
Caribbean?
Are they first generation UK or no?
No.
So are they, is that the wrong way to say it? First generation? I don't know.
I don't know how you word it.
I don't know. I guess what I want to ask you is
they pretty much grew up in the UK. They was only in the Caribbean for the early part of their lives, and then they've spent the majority of the time here in the UK.
Yeah. Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I've got an older brother.
And what does he think? Do you think you're crazy?
No, he supports me as well. So people often joke that my brother is 6'3", and I'm the shorter brother, but people say, you're the bigger brother, but the shorter one.
Yeah. Okay. So that's, you know what, that's really cool. Did your brother goes to the shows too and everything?
Yeah, if he's around, he'll go to the shows, yeah.
Okay.
But even when I was competing in European, my family, they were streaming the show so they could watch it. They had to actually put it on Zoom so everyone's watching it from the different houses because it's still in.
That's
the
awesome.
Whole Corona thing, they was watching it.
Yeah, yeah.
And now my mum now, because she's so involved in it, she'll probably already Google you to watch this whole podcast as well because she wants to know more. So
that's so awesome.
She said, I spent hours looking. I've seen this interview with you. I've seen you on this person's Instagram. So, yeah, she really invested in it.
Okay, last question before I go, because I noticed you're wearing a Mark Hector shirt. Is that your own clothing line, obviously?
It's not actually my own clothing line. So I do online coaching. As part of the online coaching, it's just a logo. Well, I've got made up myself, and it's just some clothes that I have.
So does every client get a free shirt? Like, how does that work?
We're working on getting this out. So this is the first one I had when I was going to the shows. I thought, you know what? I need some clothing for myself. So I just represented it myself when I got to the shows.
It's your prototype is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All right. We're all going to be looking for the Mark Hector clothing. Okay, buddy, listen, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you kind of giving us the background on who you are. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the offseason brings next year, man.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on. I really do appreciate this.
Yeah, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you very much. We're going to do it again. And hopefully next time you put on another 28 pounds, we'll have you back and ask you how you did it.
Definitely. And I'll tell you how.
All right, brother. Take it easy, man.
All right. Take care. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Okay. Bye.